Arizona Board of Podiatry Examiners to order at 8 a.m. on June the 14th, 2023. Heather, if you just remind who all here is present for our roll call.
Yes, Dr. Foreman?
Present.
Dr. Campbell?
Present.
Dr. Ulano?
Present.
You have a call.
Thank you. And we have our investigator present for one case here is Dr. Farahani. Dr. Polakoff and Dr. Steck will be participating telephonically. And guests that we have present are Dr. Hook and his counsel, Flynn Carey, and we also have present Dr. Kopeloff and his counsel, Michelle Jagger. Our other guests will be Dr. Kravitz, who will be telephonic. All right, does anyone have any declarations, any conflict of interest of any agenda item? Hearing none, we'll move on. Is that Dr. Polakoff?
Hey, did Dr. Polakoff just join the call? Dr. Polakoff, I believe that was you, but it's hard to hear.
No, this is the patient that made the complaint against Dr. Hook.
Okay, thank you. When we get to your complaint, we will the board chair will call on you.
Okay.
Alrighty. So we'll move on to the next thing before Dr. Polakoff joins in. The next item is 4 is our review and discussion on the meeting minutes from May 10, 2023. Those are general session minutes. Does anyone have any additions or corrections to minutes? All right. Dr. Ulano, anything? All right, hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept the general session meeting minutes of 5-10-23, as there are no corrections or additions.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. All right, do we have Dr. Polakoff yet? Ah, good morning, Dr. Polakoff. All right. We're moving on here to 5, which is our items for review and discussion of possible actions. Subsetting A is the investigation files. So we're going to go ahead and begin with a complaint number 22-07-B, which is Dr. Jeffrey Kopeloff, and Dr. Polakoff is our investigator. I would ask the doctor and his counsel to have a seat at the table, and then when they are settled in, I'll ask that Dr. Polakoff present her investigation report. We're ready whenever you are, Dr. Polakoff.
Okay, this is a case regarding Dr. Jeffrey Kopeloff. I'm a risk patient. It was a malpractice complaint, and I will make this rather simple because I did review all the paperwork. And I found that I hope everybody is doing well.
Thank you.
Okay. This patient came into the office, from what I understand, with a symptom of a nerve burning, classic with a neuroma, and the patient was under the misconception that she would have the neuroma removed as opposed to treated with the non-surgical but injection type of treatment with Dr. Kopeloff. I found that Dr. Kopeloff here, and I do believe, just in a little summary, that the doctor's office could have informed the patient a little bit more and described the treatment with maybe a picture drawn and an explanation of the treatment versus surgery would absolutely help this patient and kind of resolve this matter. I did not find that the doctor did anything against state regulations, and I believe that for this case, the patient could resolve it. I think it was a simple case, and that's about it for me.
And actually, yeah, Dr. Polakoff's Dr. Campbell, that he did actually perform the surgery. It was a neurolysis, and that's, yeah. Not, and he did, was, you know, followed by the injections and PT and orthotics, so, yeah.
But he would explain the neurolysis, what that is, versus removal surgery. I think the patient,
not even been a case.
The patient would have decided on
her
own if she wanted that or wanted the removal,
that's
subsequently did.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Polakoff? All right. Thanks, Dr. Polakoff. All right. So at this time, I will ask for summary of care or any comments from Dr. and or counsel who would ever like to proceed first.
I think the only person I haven't met is...
Oh, this is Seamus Monahan.
I'm Michelle Nager. I represented Dr. Coppola from the
Oh, okay. Very nice to meet you.
I don't really have a presentation. I think we gave a detailed summary of the process, but I think Dr. Coppola wanted to say some things to the board.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for allowing me a moment to speak. It is unfortunate, this case, and I still totally don't comprehend how the patient thought that I was going to perform a neurectomy when I performed a neurolysis. But going through that process, you know, I appreciate it's my duty as a physician to make sure that all patients duly understand what procedure they're going to have. And since this case, I've taken even greater preoperative management of the patient in discussing the case verbally with them, using graphic handouts. I've even, with the neurolysis, directed the patient to the internet, because there's a nice graphic demonstration of the procedure on YouTube. Also, if it's of any use for the board, I've also brought the exact preoperative packet that I give to my patient. And just for the record, when I interview the patient in the office the very first time and we're discussing surgery, I have the patient sign a consent form, we photocopy it, it goes into their packet, and they get a copy of the consent form for their perusal. If I haven't seen the patient in greater than 30 days and we're going to surgery, the patient will come back in prior to surgery, sign another consent form, and then they'll sign a consent form at the place of surgery. So in some of my patients, they are signing three consent forms, not more than three, but it's usually three or two. So I've taken some internal action to make sure that this would never occur again. So that's...
Thank you. I have a question.
Sure.
How many, in your years of doing the neurolysis, how many times have you ultimately had to go and later perform a neurectomy?
Honestly, I haven't performed a neurectomy, I'm thinking, in 15 years. I've only done a neurolysis. If I had to venture a guess, maybe once, maybe twice. I also, just as a side from a physician perspective, before performing a neurolysis, I order an MRI. Part of the reason is to see, is there a perineural fibrosis? Is there a large mass? If there's not, then I do go to the neurolysis. Most of the time, I'll do the neurolysis as my primary surgery, and if it doesn't provide the relief that the patient needs 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months later, then a neurectomy would be a consideration. But for the most part, my neurolysis or neurolysis is my go-to nerve decompression procedure digitally.
And I was curious, when you did the surgery, was there a lot of scar tissue already in there that was binding things down, or was there evidence of like plantar plate issues or any, you know, things that were going on?
I don't think there was. No. And this particular plaintiff, just for the record, I believe she had 5 years of investigation, care rendered to her by various physicians, and wanted to have the procedure performed. She came to me specifically for that. Because in the back of my mind, having practiced for 33 years, I always remember that perform conservative care before going to surgery. But in this particular case, the patient already was involved in this condition for 5 years, and she specifically wanted a procedure performed, which is why I did the procedure.
And you typically use the placental tissue too to decrease inflammation and improve healing?
Usually, yes.
Which is quite fine. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, did you go over the graft with her prior to the procedure?
Yes, I spoke to the patient about the procedure I was going to do. I would not have told her it was a neurectomy because, quite frankly, honestly, I haven't performed a neurectomy in many, many years. This is the procedure that I do. So I did discuss that with her. I discussed the graft. I do discuss the graft. Whenever I'm going to employ a graft, I discuss it with the patient, knowing that it is a cryopreserved placental tissue. Some patients may not want to engage in that for religious reasons or what have you. Just as a side note, I've never had a patient not want it. So I did discuss with her. Also, when the surgery was over, I made a point specifically to go seek out her husband and her father, who was there with her in the waiting room, and I explained to both of them exactly what was done, including the graft. I took a little special attention to the patient and her husband and father because the patient was my children's elementary school teacher. She taught both my older kids in school, so I wanted to, you know, give them that extra. I took the time to go out and find them and talk to them. So,
Dr. Iwani, do you have any questions for Dr. Coppola?
Dr. Coppola, I see this as a misunderstanding or miscommunication between you and the patient. I believe conservative care was performed over the 5 years, and either the earlier thing, the standard of care within the community. I couldn't find anything wrong with it, and I'm glad you just get that by instituting and implementing various thinking apps to explain this to the patient better. That's all I have to say.
Well, it seems, consensus here is obviously that standard of care was not an issue, but communication, as everybody's noted, the importance of that, and the fact that you have gone back and reevaluated
your process of consent with the packets, with the drawings. I liked the 30 days difference to remind them again. I think that's a really wonderful thing to have added. But like I said, I'm glad to see that you've implemented those changes. But I would offer a letter of concern regarding the previous behavior of not performing a good communication with the patient for that surgery day. That's my motion. Do I have a second so we can discuss? Thank you, Dr. Yolano. Okay, discussion, please.
I think that's the only I thought about it. I think that's appropriate.
Okay. Dr. Yolano, do you have any remarks or comments? Okay, great. But again, like I said, we're glad that Dr. Kopeloff has taken those steps. We can always learn, and in communication is just so important. I always go back to that so much of what we see here has to do with that communication. So we'll take a vote on that motion now. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Thank you. Opposed? So moved. All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Board.
Thank you, Doctor. Be safe. All right. Where is 8:30? Okay. Well, we can then. Dr. Kravitz will be calling in at 8:30, and that is hold on a second. That case is investigator is Dr. Farhani. So we'll wait for the doctor to call in because he needs to be present from the beginning here. We can move on to, since we're waiting here, let's move on to subsetting C, which is a request for a waiver of continuing education requirements for 22 to 23 for Dr. John Tassone. So you want to just give us some of there, Heather?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. You may recall that Dr. Tassone did request the same continuing education waiver last year, and he is claiming that the condition is still persistent and it has prevented him from working, and he's, you know, has multiple symptoms because of his condition, and he's requesting a waiver of the continuing education requirements again this year.
Okay.
And I can answer any questions.
So my thought on this is we do have the opportunity availability for online, all the CME can be done online. So there's not the necessity to travel, and with an illness that could, it was prohibitive last year. So I would also recommend that we ask for a letter from the physician indicating the level of disability so that we can determine later if we're going to waive those CMEs. So again, I would encourage him to try to do them online and to send us a letter from the physician, and then next month we should be able to make a decision on that. Or I can just direct Heather to request those items.
Yeah, I think she can just direct you to do that for now.
So does he have, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Alana, do you have any comments?
Because then podiatry has them online. It's an hour a credit, so it's just time. Mm-hmm.
And also, too, we should remember with waivers, or we can offer extensions. What is it, up to how many days? 60 days? So, we can work with the situation, but we have to have that other information before we can do that. So, okay, so we'll just direct. just direct Heather to correspond with Dr. Sasson regarding this. So let's move on to D, which is renewal applications for license and dispensing registration. Dr. Jonathan King, this is indication of a malpractice case that occurred out of state, so this is out of our jurisdiction. Everything else is fine on the application. CMEs have been done and stuff, so we really have no basis to open any kind of complaint. So I'll make a motion to accept Dr. King's renewal application as to follow statute and rule. And
seconded, do we have to do the payment thing?
No. He's already paid online.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not an initial, so. Okay. So, yeah, thank you. So, thank you for the second, Dr. Perlman. Any discussion? Hearing none, let's take our vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. The next doctor, Zeno Fowl, also, this is indicated on the new application of malpractice from out of state. Also, again, that is out of our jurisdiction and has been, I believe, dealt with there. So again, everything's in order in the application. Correct CMEs have been done. So anybody have any comments? Okay, hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept the renewal application for Dr. Zeno Fowl, that it meets all statutes.
Second.
For reapplication. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay. We still have a few minutes. Okay. Well, let's go to B, which is the issuance of new licensing. So our first applicant is up. There's somebody there.
Hi, this is Heather in the board office. Did Dr. Kravitz just join?
Yes, hi, this is Dr. Kravitz.
Hi, Dr. Kravitz, thank you.
Okay, so now we have Dr. Kravitz online, so let's go back to rule subsetting A for the investigation files for complaint 23-02-C, which is Dr. Alan Kravitz, who is present telephonically, and we have our investigator, Dr. Farahani, present, and there is no complainant present. So, Dr. Farahani, please.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dr. Farahani. I'm doing the investigative report for complaint number 23-02-C against Dr. Kravitz. The complaint information summary of allegations, CH, stated a couple of years ago, she saw Dr. Kravitz due to the pain, a distortion of her big toe joint on the right foot. The doctor said she needed surgery, mentioning that this is a particular surgery was the bread and butter of his industry. So she went on into it with no worries after surgery. During post-op appointment, she stated to Dr. Kravitz, loss of feeling in the upper part of the big toe. He stated to not worry, the feeling will come back. During the next visit, she still insisted of loss of sensation to the procedure site. Dr. Kravitz stated, quote-unquote, it could be anything. CH states that it has been 2 years later, the numbness has spread and only feeling three-fourths, specifically the big toe, its joint, and now down the left side of her foot. She states the feeling is uncomfortable. Recently, she was seen by a different doctor ordering EMG, stating that the plate could be felt through the skin and it appears to be pinching the nerve. She states that she's a petite woman and whose shoes range from 5.5 to 6.5 in size. She states that Dr. Kravitz used the wrong plate size. The current doctor states that the nerve damage is permanent after 6 months. She states spreading of numbness and sometimes tingling, and it gives a sharp pain. The patient states that she doesn't know if Dr. Kravitz really did know what he did wrong or not. but either way, she decided to lodge a complaint. She further states that she has not spoken to Dr. Kravitz since he state it could be, quote-unquote, anything. Lesser complaint states that after the surgery, to the next, to the big toe, the second digit, would lean in and rub against the big toe, creating blisters. Dr. Kravitz recommended was cutting a tendon on the third toe to rectify this. She further questioned flopping of third digit with this procedure, and he replied it would not. She states that he did not mention that it would lose most of her control over it and it could stick up. She states not as distressing as creeping numbness, but still quite upsetting. Dr. Kravitz provided a letter that I had placed in the complaint for redundancy. I reviewed the medical records. One thing I've noticed in the medical records is that the patient had a past medical history of lower back pain of C5 to C8 with a crushing injury status post motor vehicle accident that happened on 9th of 2015. On 3/28 of 2019, outside x-ray showed advanced osteoarthritis, the first and the second MTPJ, loss of joint space and articular margin, bony sclerosis with marginal osteophyte formation. On 3/29/2019, there was an initial evaluation, hallux rigidus, right great toe, with arthritis of the second MTPJ, right foot. X-ray was presented from an outside facility, confirmed the diagnosis. Between 5/1 to 6/25, there were office visits. On 7/2, there was a surgical intervention at Yuma Regional Medical Center for the arthrodesis, or the fusion of the first metatarsophalangeal joint, and a while osteotomy of the second metatarsal head right foot. The consent was signed on 6/25 of 2019, and the risk and benefits including but not limited to damage to nerves, burning, tingling, stinging, and numbness was checked off by the patient and signed. In addition to possible requirement of additional surgery or surgeries was also checked off and signed and verified by the patient. On 3/18 of 2021, the left second metatarsal osteotomy, right third toe capsulotomy, with the CPT codes of 28303 and 28270 with the diagnosis of DJD encapsulitis, I felt were in order as to the appropriate CPT codes. The financial were not of concern, so my conclusion with this is that I think patients understand the surgery is a last treatment option, and it's only to be considered if the pain is severe, limiting activities, and non-responsive to local treatment. Furthermore, patients are discussed thoroughly and are fully brought aware that the practice of medicine and surgery is not an exact science, and no guarantees can be as to the result of any procedure or any cure. Patients also understand that the explanation that they receive may not be exhaustive or all-inclusive, that other more remote risks may be involved. I believe the information provided by Dr. Kravitz was sufficient for the patient to not only the first procedure that was performed on 7/2/2019, yet another for the contralateral foot on 3/18 of 2021, approximately 8 months later. I believe the patient had ample opportunity from the initial appointment, which was 3/29 of 2019, to the actual surgical number one date of 7/2/2019 to perform her due diligence, research about the procedure performed. Additionally, she had two additional visits, 5/1 and 6/25, to ask additional questions, etc., prior to the surgery. This provides an opportunity to ask questions concerning her condition, the procedure, the risk, alternatives. She was fully discussed with the pros and the cons, and consent was signed, bringing the patient aware of possible complications. By signing such documents, patients generally agree that all of the questions that they asked had been answered to their satisfaction. Furthermore, I reviewed the post-op x-rays immediately. I believe that the hardware was actually flush with the bone and screws were placed appropriately without any prowling post-surgical intervention immediately. The joint was decompressed and the sufficient space was noted. However, with any procedure that you use any hardware, there could be a potential that the hardware must or may be removed and it could cause some impingement in nerve, and that's just the way it is. I cannot exclude my findings in her medical records that the patient was also involved in a motor vehicle accident on or about 9/15 of 2015, and with crushing injuries reported to C5 to C8, spreading of numbness 3/4 of her foot, and still progressing to the extremity, may or not be caused by the possible pistoning of the hardware, which is somewhat common that post-procedure may or may not be removed. However, it is unlikely that it's caused by the foot surgery. Creeping numbness, I believe, could be more related to the trauma that she experienced in 2015. My rule is I found the allegations unsubstantiated. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Farahani. Yeah, and as the records also indicate, the patient has low back pain, lumbar disc disease, spinal stenosis, spondylolisthesis, also thyroid, has thyroid issues, so, and she'd been taking gabapentin. So obviously, I agree that the surgical, the creeping numbness, nerve problem is certainly not probably coming from that foot. The other thing that I noticed that, of course, I'm going to ask Dr. Kravitz about how to explain this. If you look at that surgery that was performed on 3/18/21, there wasn't an osteotomy performed of that left second met. They didn't do a while. All they did was do the capsulotomy and tenotomy of the right third MPJ. He did the stress imaging so that he could determine if he needed to do an osteotomy. So I looked back at these consents and things, and it shows, preoperative order showing surgery on both the right and the left on the informed consent. And same thing with the hospital scheduling forms, it says that. So there's no explanation in the chart as to why that wasn't done. So I think that's something that, again, like I said, we can address with asking Dr. Kravitz to explain why there's that inconsistency in documentation about the surgery. But I don't have any other questions regarding that. Those are just some things I noted. Dr. Foreman?
I don't have any questions. Very complete.
Thank you. Dr. Yolano? Thank you. Now, the complainant is not present. She had requested this case be postponed till like August because she's out of town and kind of off the grid. And I believe that that request is not pertinent to this board, as she's not part of the process, really.
Part of the action.
The action. Thank you, Seamus. I needed that word. Anyway, so we obviously don't have her to hear from. If everybody's read her complaint, they should be aware of what she has, what her complaint is. So now I would ask Dr. Kravitz to go ahead and give us a summary of the situation. Whenever you're ready, Dr. Kravitz.
I am here, okay. So with regard to this patient, I don't remember the specifics of what we had discussed, and I don't exactly remember why for the second had been scheduled wasn't performed. But my best guess or hypothesis on that would be that in pre-op, she told me she did not want to have the opposite foot done, and that we only addressed the tendon on the right foot. So that would have been at the patient's request at that time. I don't, I haven't reviewed the consent form at the facility to see what she had signed for that morning. But the only reason I would have not done the opposite foot, if that was the plan, was that the patient had that changed her mind on what she wanted me to do. Secondly, with regard to this case, I think in retrospect, using a smaller plate would have been advantageous. The plate that I used is certainly indicated for patients of all sizes, but she is a very small patient. And in hindsight, I wish I had used something a little bit lower profile. I don't know if that was available at that time. However, I do know that if she was complaining about the plate thickness and irritation, when I went in for the second procedure, I would have certainly removed the plate at that time. So it's my thought that at that time she wasn't complaining of that. Lastly, her procedure seemed to go without complication. Obviously, with toe rebalancing procedures, with procedures such as the decompression osteotomy through a lesser metatarsal, and with tenotomies and capsulotomies to the joints, there are a wide range of responses with regard to medial lateral drift, elevation, rotation of the toes. And it is something that is, in many ways part of the course of those types of surgeries. And I try to make sure all patients are aware that there are no guarantees with those types of surgeries. I'm happy to answer any specific questions that any of you might have.
Oh, great, thanks. I do have some. So when the surgery initially, I can imagine that the amount of scar tissue was quite great at both the first and the second MPJs of that right foot. And if did you see any entrapment at that time? What do you recall?
I made no reference in her op report of any visible entrapment. And typically, if there is scar tissue with any revision, the small forefoot nerves are too small to visualize anyway.
Right.
So I don't recall seeing it, nor do I think I would have.
Okay. And I noticed that you ran a pharmacy on the problem, on the patient, as to she was certainly, receiving a lot of pain medications and such from a lot of other practitioners. So, let's see. And then, of course, you addressed my question about, the consents having that left foot, but there was nothing documenting that conversation in a post-op note or anything saying that why that left foot wasn't done on the 18th of March of 21. So,
now typically, if I had changed the plan from what was planned preoperatively, I would have had a paragraph in the operative note from that day, or a separate blurb or separate note. I don't recall why that wasn't done. It was most likely just an oversight.
Mm-hmm. And the patient, the complainant, didn't mention that in her complaint that she had, I don't remember seeing anything in there that she was saying that she had asked that not be done. Okay. Dr. Feldman, do you have questions?
No, I don't have any questions.
Dr. Alano, any questions?
I have no questions.
Okay, great. All righty. I don't believe any. Obviously, any standard of care issues were done, and I certainly understand the fact of, just like Dr. Kravitz had said, on that surgery of 3/18/21, he would have removed, if that hardware had been painful, he would have removed it then, which would have been appropriate when he was doing the right third TNC, so...
And I think, you know, people, you know, when you do surgery, you reevaluate things. And like you said, he thought, you know, maybe a smaller plate would have been appropriate. But then, too, where he's located, he may not have that availability. So he did, I think, appropriately. You look at the x-rays, everything looks great with the placement and the position. So I would make a motion to dismiss this case 23-02-Z as there were no violation of state statute.
Seconded.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Kravitz.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Be safe. All right. Time is set. Okay, so we have probably another 15 minutes till Dr. Steck is available. So we'll move back to doing our license initial applications for license. So Dr. Timothy Chan, let me get my stuff here just a second. So Dr. Chan is applying via comedy. And he also indicated that he'd had a malpractice case in Florida that was settled with prejudice, all claims released. So again, that's out of our jurisdiction, but noted on that renewal application, that comedy application. Everything else, I believe, is in order, fees paid, etc. Any questions or concerns from any of my board members? Alrighty, so I'll make a motion to accept Dr. Chan's application via comedy and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Our next is Dr. Rachel Gerber. This is a regular license application, which includes, you know, registration to dispense drugs and devices. Everything here is complete. Anyone have any questions or concerns on this applicant? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the initial application for licensure, including the registration for drugs and devices from Dr. Gerber, and to issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Our next, oh, sorry, any discussions? Getting ahead of myself. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next applicant is Christy Ho. This is also initial application. We'll be completing residency here in Phoenix on June 30th of 2023. Everything appears to be in order. Is there any questions or concerns? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the initial application for licensure. Dr. Ho will be finishing her program residency on June 30th of 23 and to issue the license upon completion of her residency and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Sandy Nguyen. Initially, they had applied, Dr. Nguyen had applied through universal recognition, but switched to regular license application. Everything is in order here. Anybody have any questions or concerns? Okay, hearing none, I'll make a motion to accept the initial application for regular license for Dr. Nguyen, including the registration for dispensing, and to issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
So moved. Our next applicant is Amy Ross, also in residency here in town. Completion date, June the 30th. Everything else is in order here. Any questions or concerns? Hearing none, I'll make a motion to accept this initial application from Dr. Amy Ross and to issue the license upon completion of her residency and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next applicant is Kayla Wright. Everything is in order here on her application. She is also at the VA residency program and will be completing there on June the 30th of 23. Any questions or concerns? Hearing none, then I'll make a motion to accept this initial application for licensure from Dr. Kayla Wright and to issue her license upon completion of her residency and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? All right. So I guess we can, we're still about 10 minutes, so can we move on to your executive director's report? Heather.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. And just to give you an update, Dr. Steck did email me. I emailed him back and I texted him, so hopefully he joins soon.
Okay, good.
So in regards to my executive director's report, to date, the board has processed 213 renewals, and there are five deficient renewals that are pending. We've had four licensees indicate that they will be retired this year. I did include a performance evaluation form and a brief summary of activities for the last year and a half that had happened in the board office, and I'm asking that the board members just complete that form and send it back to me at their convenience. In regards to the rules, the rule package that the Governor's Regulatory Review Council approved last June, the board knows that I've been holding those rules to, you know, waiting to file the final notice of rulemaking in order to have those rules become effective as closely to SB 1078 as possible. The board may or may not be aware, but there's talk that the legislature is not going to adjourn until August. So I've spoken with, and I should also state that the board was made aware that the board's five-year rule review is due by July 31st. So with that information, I've spoken with a few of my colleagues, and I did have a meeting with the governor's office health policy advisor yesterday afternoon regarding the board's rule package and the five-year rule review. And it's at the advice of everybody that I've spoken with that I go ahead and file the final notice of rulemaking prior to when the board will be hearing, prior to when the governor's regulatory review council will be hearing the board's report on that five-year review. So I'll be filing those rules by the end of this month, so they will become effective 2 to 3 months prior, and that's just with the guess that the legislature is going to adjourn in August. That's the last that I've heard. So I will put, you know, a disclaimer on the board's website regarding that section that may not apply until the legislation becomes effective, and I will not be sending out, you know, any email regarding the rules being effective until the legislation becomes effective. So, and I can answer any questions on that, and hopefully that all made sense. I know there was probably a lot of information. Okay, if there's no questions, I did provide the most current budget, and I can answer any questions on that. And I also included the current complaint log, and no new complaints have been added since I've sent out materials. And that's That's my summary. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Because we don't have any. So we can go on to the legislative memo update.
Yes, Madam Chair, board members, at the last meeting, I did indicate that SB 1333 was forwarded to the governor for signature, but had not been signed yet, but it was signed. And this bill just states that DHS has to create a searchable database that's posted on its website that contains the names of licensees who have had their license revoked and the regulatory board that revoked the license. So no other bills that were on my report prior have passed. They all died. I can answer any questions on that.
Can I have any questions? Dr. Lamb, any questions?
And as I stated, you know, that there's rumors that the legislature's not going to adjourn until August. From my understanding is that they're not going to be on the floor hearing any bills. But if anything changes, I will definitely keep the board posted.
Okay. Number 8 is our summary of current events. Is there anything to add into that category, agenda item? Okay. We really can't do a call to the public just yet because that comes at the end.
Can we take a 5-minute break?
We could do that. Let me ask one more question. On 10, does anybody have anything they'd like to see on future agenda items other than now that we have Seamus back in our midst, that he can go back to completing the board education?
Right.
And what category were we in?
Oh, I don't know. I think we had, did we have two trainings?
Mm-hmm. We did.
My understanding is that it was going to be on adjudication of complaints.
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect.
There you go.
And I'll get that to Heather. See, review it ahead of time.
Very good. Okay. So, since we're still waiting for Dr. Steck, let's take a 5-minute break.
Pardon me, board members. This is Patient Marcus on page 23. See, I have a statement I'd like to read to the board in behalf of my faith before we take that recess. Could you allow me to do that now at this time? Because I have been waiting patiently for 55 minutes.
Hi, this is Heather Broaddus. Dr. Steck is the investigator assigned to this complaint, and he indicated that he would be calling in to the meeting at about 9 o'clock. So we will hear from the board's investigator first.
We've read this.
And your statement was forwarded to the board prior to the meeting because you had sent it to me prior to this meeting. So the board will take a 5-minute break to allow Dr. Steck to join the call, and then when we come back, the board will hear from you. So
So you said the board has a copy of my statement and has been able to have a chance to read that already, but like I said, I did want to make that read it to the board myself and let them know how much how much pain and suffering I've endured over this situation.
I understand, but until the board chair calls on the complaint, the board cannot hear the complaint. So we will take a 5-minute break to allow Dr. Steck to join the call, like I said, and then as soon as Dr. Steck joins the call, the board will hear from Dr. Steck, and then the board chair will call on you, and you will be able to present your statement.
Okay, Heather. I'll patiently wait for you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Dr. Campbell back on record at 9:19. We'll proceed now back to finishing our complaint investigations. This is case 22-20-C, Dr. Thomas Hook, and so we'll first hear from Dr. Steck as he is our investigator. So anytime you're ready, Dr. Steck.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to apologize to the board. board and all those present for my delay. I really apologize for that. It was out of my control, but again, I hate wasting everyone's time, so I'm sorry about that. So this is complete information and summary of allegations. Patient ML presented to the doctor for complaints of bunions. ML stated that he was given padding on his first visit. He did not help very well. He had tried other conservative treatment as well. He came back and was scheduled for surgery. He states that he had second thoughts about surgery in the morning and that the nurse, quote-unquote, sweet-talked him into proceeding. Patient states the pain was severe. He had no idea it would hurt as much as it did after surgery. He did develop a post-op infection, and he thought he would lose his foot. A combination of the above led to suicidal thoughts. Patient states that in retrospect, his bunion was not that bad, and he regrets having surgery. States the pain has moved away from the bunion into the ball of his foot, and this pain has not gone away. Patient submitted additional communication to his first letter to the board and reiterated that he felt that he was not told the truth about surgery, that he had more pain than he would thought. He also submitted a document from the hospital surgical center stating that this is not elective surgery and that the surgery cannot be delayed. This document is provided in the packet of information for this case. So the allegations as I see them from the patient is that, number one, failure to inform the patient of surgical procedure details, including amount of pain that he would experience and the time off of his foot. Allegation number two, failure to acknowledge patient's depression and suicidal ideation. Dr. Hook responded and denies all of the allegations that were brought by the patient. He provided a table, a very thorough table, addresses, and addresses many of the allegations in the patient's complaint. To summarize these, number one, he states that he always has patients not weight bearing for at least 6 weeks, never shorter. The patient signed informed consent, reviewed to him by a nurse at the hospital, and then explained in his own words back to the doctor what his understanding of the procedure was. In addition to this consent, there was also a consent done in the office prior to the day of surgery. Patient reported pain levels of 0, 2, 5, and 2 out of 10 at his post-op, at his four post-op appointments, and never exhibited allodynia. Feels that the patient's pain was typical or below average at the time he was treating him with respect to pain for this type of surgery. Number four, the patient never verbalized suicidal ideation to the doctor. The doctor does state that in a visit pre-op, he did refer the patient to a family physician for depression, which was in his review systems. The patient did not make a follow-up appointment to address the depression. After initial review of the complaint, the doctor states that this was the first time he knew of any suicidal ideation. And actually, after Dr. Hub got the complaint, he sent a letter to the patient giving him resources where he could get help. The doctor states that the form saying the surgery was non-elective was used in error and a leftover formality of the pandemic. Furthermore, he states that this form was not seen by the patient and was just used in communication between the doctor's office and the hospital. The post-operative course, in summary, seemed to go fairly straightforward. Preoperatively, the patient came into the office on 4-4 of 22, stated he had a large bunion and wanted it, quote, chopped off. They state the pain was a 2 out of 10. His review was, he was diagnosed with HAV, physical exam was appropriate. I think diagnosis and conservative treatment was properly performed. X-rays were not initially available, but were subsequently supplemented and showed hallux valgus with osteoarthritis in the first MTP joint. Patient came back about 3 months later on July 6th, continued bunion pain, and wanted to discuss surgery. A typical exam diagnosis, radiographs all seemed appropriate for the diagnosis and proposed surgery. An injection was discussed but declined by the patient. The plan was for a first MTP joint arthrodesis. A consent was reviewed and signed. Also, I didn't have this consent on the initial evaluation on the July 6th visit, but again, this was supplemented later, and there was a consent on this date, making a consent in the office on 7-6-22 and on 8-5-22. So there was both of those consents. Were they able to review and appear, and upon my review, appeared appropriate. Surgery occurred on August 5th of 22. First post-operative visit was 10 days later, and the pain was reported at 0 out of 10, although we were anxious. No infection, and the sutures came out. On 9-7-22, there was a small amount of drainage. Post-op infection was noted and treated with antibiotics, and over the next two visits, this infection resolves without complication. Radiographs were reviewed. Again, preoperative and postoperative x-rays appeared appropriate for the condition and appeared to heal. In summary, for the last little bit of his postoperative course, he said that radiographically he healed, but the patient complained of a lot of pain. He had questions about the surgery repeatedly that the doctor addressed. The patient was asked to come back for continued follow-up. It did not. Review of the allegations. Allegation number one, failure to inform the patient of the surgical procedure, details including amount of pain that he would experience in the time off of the boot. I initially reported this as equivocal because of the informed consent. I felt that it was important to have informed consent before the day of surgery, which, again, on my initial review, I did not have, but was subsequently provided. Therefore, I changed my recommendation from equivocal to unsubstantiated because of these consent forms have appeared very appropriate to me. In the patient's note, in the physician's note, it clearly states he was told that it would be 6 weeks not weight bearing. Furthermore, any patient going to have surgery can reasonably expect that pain, and in fact, in the consent form on 7-6-22, so that in the text of the note, but also handwritten, that there would be pain. In addition, it's hard to predict how much pain is going to occur from patient to patient. Some patients have very little pain, and some patients have a lot of pain. And I don't think this would, in my opinion, I don't think this pain or postoperative course was out of the ordinary, and these allegations are unsubstantiated. Allegation number two, failure to acknowledge a patient's depression and suicidal ideation. I also believe this is unsubstantiated. The doctor referred him to a primary care prior to surgery for depression, and the patient didn't make this appointment. I also thought it was a very good gesture that after receiving a complaint like this, that the doctor would send him information about obtaining help for suicidal ideation. I'm convinced that if the patient would have verbalized this to the doctor or staff at the hospital, that surgery would not have proceeded. I did have a few questions for discussion. Number one, in my note, that I didn't have the pre-op x-rays at the time. That had been resolved and were appropriate. Also, at number two, the consent was obtained. I did mention number three, that preoperatively the patient only complained of pain as a 2 on the first visit and a 3 on the second, and to please explain justification for surgery. In my experience, I think this is these pain levels can be misleading if the person grooming the patient says, what is your pain, on a level of 0 to 10, and they say a 2, that could be a whole variety of things. When is it a 2? Is it a 2 right now when you're sitting down not doing anything? That could change to a much higher level with activity or with severe. Number four, certificate of non-elective surgery could be confusing. I think that this this pandemic form that we all had to deal with during the pandemic, it seems to be a remnant of that. Dr. Hook sent supplemental information in stating that this was not something that was signed by the patient, was between the doctor's office and the surgical center, and the patient would not have seen this. Had the patient seen it before, this could be confusing to some patients regarding the need for surgery. We have received communication from the doctor's office and the surgical center stating that this practice has been absolved and no longer doing this. I think that's all I have, Dr. Campbell.
Thank you. That's very complete. And I do agree with you. You know, and Lily had said about extraordinary pain, and there's, you know, that there's no indication in the documentation that there was any evidence that there was any, you know, chronic regional pain syndrome developing. And I'm sure that that would have been picked up. So that's the only other thought that I had on the subject. And do you have any questions for
very complete?
Thank you. Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions for Dr. Steck?
Oh, no questions for Dr. Steck. Thank you, Dr. Steck.
Okay. Let me make sure I don't. Okay, so we have next, we will hear from Dr. Hook and or Councilor Bolt. So, gentlemen.
Good morning, Dr. Campbell, members of the board, Dr. Steck. This is Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. Hook.
Morning. Thank you for taking the time to hear this case.
You can announce yourself.
I'm Dr. Thomas Hook. Thank you.
All right, and Dr. Campbell, I'll obviously defer to how, as the president, how you want to handle this. Would you like us to make some statements, or do you want us to defer until the complainant's had an opportunity?
No, actually, if you would make a statement now, or if you want to make a summary of your, you know, how the case went with you.
Sure, I can provide some comments as counsel, and then Dr. Hook at any point is available for questions. What I would note is this is a case in which it doesn't appear that Dr. Steck found a deviation from the standard of care. He did have some questions. Two of those questions were just a product of how the Athena system discloses records. When there's a lot of screens, sometimes an item or two gets missed. He's obviously cured that as soon as Dr. Steck raised the concern about the consent not being in there or the pre-op x-rays. He supplemented. We also provided a brief supplement because we thought it was important that you had a written response to Dr. Steck's discussion items. I think there's no indication whatsoever, contrary to the complaint, that Dr. Hook acted in an inappropriate or malicious manner or acted recklessly. I agree, the chart is very clear that there were conservative attempts at treatment. Corticosteroid treatment was rejected by the patient, and the patient was given a choice of surgical interventions and discussed. And the
pardon me, sir, you will have your opportunity to speak. I do not appreciate having you interrupted. We give everyone the same courtesy. Thank you.
So as indicated, the patient was offered multiple surgical interventions. Risks and benefits were discussed with each, and a choice was made. I also think that there is incontrovertible evidence, as agreed to by Dr. Steck, that there were multiple informed consents provided. I've had cases before this board and other boards where there's a dislike of having only a single informed consent the day of surgery. I think that's been well communicated either by your staff or just as has become the standard of care with a lot of your professionals, that they understand they have to, it's appropriate to do those two consents. I do think that the chart indicates that Dr. Hook was very thoughtful about the procedure. There was that question that Dr. Steck raised about the pain scales. We did provide you some literature. I actually dug into this because I thought it was important to give you some background on this. Pain scales are reported by a patient are wildly inaccurate and very much based on the individual's experience. And so I think that Dr. Hook did a sufficient job looking for other explanations, probing what pain meant, and properly charting. We did also indicate that there were other charted factors at play, and Dr. Hook can speak to those, including multiple requests to have the bunion removed, a chart note that the patient reported that the pain would start within an hour of wearing shoes. It interfered with weight-bearing activities. It was a degenerative condition. So there were a lot of factors beyond the pain scale. In addition, I think that there's been good conversation about those the periop packet and the non-elective certificate. To be clear on that, the way the patient got a hold of that is he did a request for his records, and that would have only been after the surgery when he was able to get that certificate. So there's no situation where at any point it was communicated to the patient that he had a non-elective bunion surgery. And obviously, had that been submitted, I don't know that periop at a hospital or a clinic during high COVID would have agreed that that was a non-elective procedure. And so that certificate was an error. It's been remedied. But it is a periop doc that no patient would have seen. Finally, I think the pain levels appeared to be appropriate. And also, I would note that the patient's mental health needs were charted and referrals were made both immediately and then after when Dr. Hook heard first of suicidal ideation. He did provide another writing, and you have that letter. I think it was very appropriate in tone, and I think it was him continuing to meet the standard of care. So based upon all that, I think this is a relatively straightforward case. I think it was handled in a workmanlike, straightforward way, and I don't think there's anything here that would indicate a need for discipline. We'd ask that the board consider a dismissal on the matter.
Dr. Hook, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, just like... thank you for the thorough investigation into this case, Dr. Steck and the board. I am sorry that the patient has endured so much suffering. Unfortunately, I was unable to foresee how he would react to the surgery that was planned and executed. And as Mr. Carey said, I do believe that the standard of care was maintained. It was a relatively straightforward pre-op and post-operative course, aside from a small post-operative infection, which was appropriately treated with cultures and antibiotics and resolved. And as Mr. Carey said, I could not have been aware of suicidal ideations if they were not made aware to me, or not made known to me. So that's one of the main complaints here. And I'll defer any additional talking to answering questions. Thank you.
Yeah, I do have a couple. They're, I guess, maybe rather direct but delicate questions. Have you had any more threats made against you?
I have not.
Now, I also see on the past medical history that there's indication that cannabis has been used. Did you ever have time in the office where you were concerned about evidence of use of cannabis pre-post-op?
I did not.
Okay. Because the reason I'm asking this is that we all know it's a lot more potent than 20, 30 years ago, and that it is very much can be related and cause changes in pain association or levels of pain in perception, interpretation of pain can be related to causing more depression, etc. And I noticed there was this, and there was no evidence of, pardon me, of any trauma to the foot during the perioperative period. And also, again, as my question I made to, or comment I made to Dr. Steck about, there's absolutely no evidence of a chronic regional pain syndrome, correct?
Mm-hmm. The last time I saw the patient in the office, there was no significant tenderness around the surgical area or any of the other cardinal signs of CRPS.
Thank you. Dr. Foreman.
And did you go over with the patient in your pre-op discussion about putting a plate in?
Yes.
Do you use models or anything, Dr. Hook?
I occasionally do. I don't recall if I did with the patient. I don't think I did.
Okay. Dr. Arano, do you have questions for Dr. Hook?
No questions.
Okay. All right. So now, I will preface that, okay, we've all read the complainant. Remember, we use initials ML. We've all had the opportunity to read it, but he has asked for permission to read that to us, which now we will give the gentleman his time to speak. So if you want to go ahead, ML, you're more than welcome.
And thank you for the opportunity to go forward. First of all, in regard to the testimony given, I would like to note that, first of all, I don't recall at any time Dr. Hood suggesting an injection or steroid dose at all. That's a false-based lie. Second of all, it's also a false-based lie that he did not give you that certificate claim that this was not a non-elective surgery. That's what I proceeded. I have, you gotta remember, I'm a cancer survivor. I have the utmost respect and admiration for doctors of all types. And I put Dr. Hood up on a pedestal as a medical doctor. And I thought that that's what he was going to do for me, because my cancer doctor did the same for me. So at no time did I ever question his expertise or his intention at all. And when he told me that this was a non-elective procedure, I just automatically figured this was an absolute must-have to do. When he, all he ever told me was that he discovered arthritis in my foot, and this was an arthritic condition. And never at any time did he come to explain to me the exact procedure that he was intending to address that condition with. And also, number 23, my first initial visit to Dr. Hook, I indicated that I was very depressed and I was not sure about whether I should proceed with this surgery. I know at any time we also fall face by this. I wanted the surgery. I never said I wanted the surgery. In fact, if anything, I kept telling him, I don't think I want to do this. I don't think I want to do this. And it was his nurse that indicated to me that it would only be 5 weeks off my team. And when he said 6 weeks, that when I came back after 5 weeks, he said, you gotta go every week. I was very upset because I was gonna be in the family for only 5 weeks. It was, I was another fault case by it, but they told me it was only gonna be 5 weeks. And I was under the impression that this was, first of all, this was a non-elective surgery. I had to do this. So thank you, everybody. Well, thank you for 1 minute, though. I didn't have the absolute trust and admiration and highest esteem for Dr. Hook and all you doctors. I'm a cancer survivor. You don't understand what that means. But I place my absolute life and trust in your hands. And for this to go wrong, and for me to deal with painful and psychological trauma of my entire life, should be not taken lightly. On top of that, I would like to, at this time, go ahead and read my four-page statement, just for the banner of the record, so we'll keep on the record. So here we go.
I'd like to make a few statements regarding Dr. Hook. I feel that Dr. Hook is, what Dr. Hook did to me was to play a trick on my wall. He was already severely depressed. I told him I was depressed. He should abandon me. And when I was in a weak state of mind in the state of Dallas, what to do, he purposely left me in the car about what he intended to do, and he put that titanium plate in my foot. And he fused the joint on my big toe, which I didn't want, and now experience severe psychological trauma. If Dr. Hunter had told me about the implant and fused joint, I would have never agreed to the surgery. He was devious and treacherous to do that, and has left me with extreme psychological trauma over it. You do not understand how much pain and suffering I went to endure over this. And I do appreciate his apology, saying I'm sorry. I appreciate that very much, Dr. He played a cheap trick on me, and that was wrong. Thanks to do to anyone. I told Dr. Hook I was depressed, and I really didn't want to do the surgery. And instead of respecting me, he pushed me into it, along with his nurses who said, sold it to me like a used car salesman with the statement, it's only going to be 5 weeks. I was irresponsible. He purposely pushed me like a depressed person into a suicidal state of mind, which was reckless as well as unethical. He violated his own Hippocratic oath and endangered a human life, my life. It's very important to me, my life. I take it very, very seriously. It's a human life. At the first visit, he told me that I was okay and nothing should be done. But then after the second visit, he reversed himself and insisted that I needed surgery right away and ran the whole procedure down my throat with that certificate of non-elective surgery. That could confuse anybody. I thought for sure I had to have this was absolute mouth procedure. I feel he played a cheap trick on me. To make a buck. And on top of that, he paused the surgery after 8 months, 9 months now, I still have severe ball foot pain as well as tremendous amount of nerve damage. Therefore, it's my recommendation that Dr. Hook should be suspended if not result from practicing medicine. What kind of a doctor plays tricks on people and pushes them to suicide and then laughs about it? Like it's some kind of sick joke? My life's a sick joke to you people? I've had severe emotional and physical trauma after the surgery, ever since. And I feel that he purposely misled me into it and had no cause to report on it before the surgery. And that he should have stopped the surgery until I had a psychological review from another doctor before proceeding with the surgery. Being cautious, knowing the extreme pain of the surgery could cause a suicidal condition. I've experienced incredible pain over it. Dr. Hook should be in such a great hurry to test people. You said that surgery should be the last course of events. There was no hesitation whatsoever on Dr. Hook's part. He wanted to do the surgery, and I didn't want to do it. That part, I'm adamant about, because I do not come in and say, I want surgery. That's a ball face law. He should be open and honest with his patients by not keeping anything a secret. I told Dr. Hook at the first visit I was depressed, and I wasn't sure about feeling. That's like a red light or a stop sign. If he just blew it off like, I don't care, I need the money, so let's round this guy's throat. I'll never trust another doctor again, and I'm talking about a cancer survivor. I'll never trust another doctor again. And I will always seek 2 or 3 opinions before having anything done again. So Dr. Hitz did for the unscrupulous criminal act. And if he did it to me, how many other people did he play this trick on? Only use the medical board. If you have a conscience, it's doctors, house of words. Dr. Hook is created. By suspending or revoking his license and putting an end to this kind of irresponsible medical practice on earth. I told you 3 times, Dr. Hook, 3 times. In your fire statement so far. I'll every word of the pain and the worst you're just about what he did to me. The psychological trauma as well as the physical pain has ruined my life. I seriously considered pursuing a charge of reckless endangerment and about to push me to suicide. But I won't do that because I don't believe Dr. Hook is going to get off. I give him the benefit of the doubt. He knew how painful the surgery was, and yet he kept it a secret. That's why I'm so mad at him. Lastly, last thing, Dr. Hook should think about what he's doing to other people. You know, maybe sometimes jail time would change his conscience and help him to treat people with gentleness, respect, kindness, and honesty. And I, where he has no conscience about what he's doing. He did that to me. Finally, at one time, the doctor looked out to me and had an alternative surgery. This idea that he offered me an injection of steroids, that's Paul Fed Fry. I don't recall him ever saying anything about an injection of steroid shot. That's a Paul Fed Fry. No steroid shots, no cortisol shots for pain, not even the new experimental drug, PX536 for plans that has not been cleared by the VA yet. FDA. Nobody warned me about the pain level associated with this kind of surgery. When I mentioned this to one of Dr. Hook's receptionists, she just laughed and said, too bad, that's part of life. What kind of sadistic people are you? To say, to laugh at somebody who's experienced extreme pain. No compassion, no remorse, no respect for others. Thornhill was a good counsel for me. Certainly not to proceed and not cancel any surgery that was considered extremely painful. Dr. Hook is pushing people into surgeries not needed and tricking people into suicidal situations, which is reckless, cruel, abusive, and sadistic. Not only reckless, but perhaps treacherous, keeping everything a secret. But I give him the benefit of the doubt. To make money for his practice, when will you put the well-being of the patient above the profit of the practice? Sincerely, Mark and Sullivan.
Thank you.
I stand by the report for it, and I thank you once again for giving me this opportunity to address you and make my feelings and my statements to the part of the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
I do have one question for you, sir. What is your use of cannabis? Because it was noted in your record that you use cannabis.
I no longer use cannabis at all. This whole debacle of And the debacle of surgery, I have not relegated myself to any cannabis use. And I don't believe that cannabis use should have anything to do with this particular situation. And farewell to try to bring that into this particular thing. But I can probably, you guys are going to shoot me down on some kind of drugo or spaced out weirdo or some suicidal maniac. I'm a human being.
That was not my. Sir, that was not the reason I asked that question, because we have a question of the pain perception, and cannabis use can alter that. I'm only asking that from a didactic or scientific question, trying to understand a little bit more why maybe you responded to pain differently. And I'm assuming this being that you've had cancer, that you've had other surgeries along the way, and I was curious as to, did you experience a lot of pain with previous surgeries? I'm only inquiring to gain knowledge.
I understand. No, when I had the cancer surgery, I had a tenectomy, had a kidney removed in Reno, Nevada, by Dr. Wood, I believe his name. on July 5th, 2011, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I had no associated, at that time, I was using cannabis, and I had no associated pain whatsoever. In fact, the cancer surgery, it connected me, and he took up my kidney, and so slick and so smooth. The doctor was so good that I went back and I told him, I thanked him for saving my life. I offered him money. I told him how much I appreciated it, that he was a miracle worker, that what he had done, and he was doing God's work. And I thanked him again and again and asked him if there was anything I could ever do for him, that for him to call on me. He just said, no sweat, buddy, I'm just doing my job, but I do appreciate your gratitude. And that's why I put you doctors up on a high pedestal. You guys are miracle workers. I believed in you. I was your greatest opponent. I would have never made this complaint if I didn't feel pain and sorrow, remorse, regret, psychological trauma that I've been through. It's incredible. This foot surgery was 10 times worse than that cancer surgery. So don't think I was your greatest opponent. I believe in you guys. You guys are great. You guys are miracle workers. But Dr. Hill changed my whole perception of the medical industry, the doctors. I don't trust you guys anymore, I'm sorry to say. I have a lot of doubts about it. And like I said, if I thought for 1 minute anything other way, I would have never made this complaint before. And that's why I want this opportunity to address you guys and let you really know from these people down in the gutter where we live, down in the gutter of this world, that go through these operations, that this is what they're experiencing. Maybe you guys are surgeons, you don't really understand the pain of this all. That's the most painful experience I've ever been through. And I'm still experiencing this. It's when it's my nerve down the head, and the ball foot point pain doesn't go away. And I'm trying to give the doctor a real quick the benefit of the doubt and said, I'm going to give him a whole year before I see another physician on this. Give it a good, honest year and let it heal before I go see another doctor. At this point, so I have not seek out the opinion of another doctor at this time. But I'm going to. You can count on that. But once again, I want to reiterate that all of you guys greatest advocates, these doctors are wonderful people that do miraculous things in this world. And I had put you guys on a pedestal. And unfortunately, Dr. Hook has learned that idealistic idea that I had about doctors. I'm sorry, ma'am. I just don't trust you guys anymore. Not after what we did.
Well, thank you. We appreciate, and like I said, we give everyone the opportunity to voice their views of the situation. And now, if there's any rebuttal response back from counsel.
I would just note two items. I don't want to go item by item in response to that. I would note that on 7-6-2022, it is charted that corticosteroid was offered to the patient. I'd also note that this case was originally submitted to the Arizona Medical Board. It happens. Happens with some of our other boards, too. In that response, not only is the certificate not mentioned at all, there's actually a reference to two different visits in which the patient claimed that Dr. Hook told him that bunions were naturally occurring and can't be operated on or shouldn't be operated on due to the insurance company's not paying for it. So it contrasts very significantly to his then follow-up December account in which he sent that directly to Heather, in which it then starts talking about this this certificate. So the bottom line is the certificate was not, clearly from his response, the idea of this being non-elective It was clearly not on his radar when he filed his initial complaint, and once he gained the certificate through, I'm assuming, a medical records request, that suddenly became front and center. But if you read the two complaints, they tell two very different stories. I think the bottom line is the, again, I would go back to this was a procedure performed in a very workmanlike, standard way, and I don't think there's any evidence of any deviations.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion since with Dr. Steck's report, we did not find any standards below the standards of care for complaint number 22-20-C.
We have a second. Thank you. Any other discussion? All in favor? No, pardon me, we're adjudicating. If you have comments, sir, you can direct those to Heather at the end of. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm sorry I didn't get all the last part, but I believe I am understanding that you moved to have no action against Dr. Hook whatsoever, that the case has been suspended. Is that correct?
Yes, this is Heather Abrades, ML, and I will be sending you a correspondence, but the board did dismiss the case, and it's no longer going to discuss that case. So I can talk to you after the meeting if you would like to call me, but again, you will receive correspondence from me.
Okay, Heather, so with this, I understand that they rejected the complaint, and there's going to be no suspension.
The board dismissed the complaint as it did not find any violation of roller statute.
Okay. I'll start to get there with you. So, yeah. Well, that's what my buddy told me. He said those guys were not going to.
Okay. And now you and I can discuss this after the meeting, but the board has more business that it needs to discuss, okay?
Pardon me, Seamus just indicated that, that Dr. Foreman should have
remake your motion to dismiss complaint 22-20-C. We're not following the board's standards.
And it's been seconded. Do we need to revote?
Yeah.
Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved.
Justice in this
world. And again,
thank you.
ML, if you want to call me after the meeting, we can discuss this, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, sorry. I knew that was going to be tough. I just didn't want to. All right, so where are we?
I think we're done.
Well, we just have, okay, we've hit our thing, and so call to the public, there's no public to call. We did the agenda item, okay. So our next board meeting is July the 12th, 2023 at 8 a.m. in Boardroom C. And anybody else have anything else? All agenda items have been addressed. So I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting at 10:02 a.m.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved.